right, thank you. We will call to order the meeting of the California Health Benefit Exchange. We will convene and then retire into closed session, and we will reconvene in the public portion of the meeting at 12 o'clock noon. Members present, Belshe, Kennedy,
here.
The chair, we have a quorum. Dr. Ross will be joining us, and Paul Fearer is unavailable for today's meeting, which he had previously announced due to a scheduling conflict. We are going into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 100500, subsection J, and we will announce upon return any actions that were taken. We will also disclose any conflicts at that time, if any members have them, when we reconvene. So we are now retired into closed session. Thank you for your patience. We will reconvene in open session. In a moment, I'll ask the executive director in his report to share any items that need to be shared from our actions in open session. I would ask the operator to open the lines, and during public comment, I think people are starting to get used to this new system where we will take comment from the lines as they are available so that people aren't waiting their turn, and we'll ask you here in the auditorium to wait if we could indulge you. We did take roll and did the conflict disclosure at 10 o'clock before we went into closed session. There were no conflicts disclosed. I will ask again in open session if any members have any conflicts that need to be disclosed. We will entertain a motion to approve the minutes from the December 20th meeting. Are there any questions, additions, or modifications to those minutes from members of the board? Is there any public comment about those minutes? Take the roll. Belcher? Rock? You're here, and you said yes. Ross?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Here.
And the chair is aye on the motion to approve the minutes. Mr. Executive Director, we will turn to you for your report.
Great. Thank you very much, Diana. And Happy New Year to everyone. And I'd take a moment to reflect that we're meeting the day after Martin Luther King's holiday. I very often think about Martin Luther King Day as the patron saint and holiday for those that have been working on healthcare reform. Reverend King noted that of all the injustices, inequality and access to healthcare is one that he held most dear and something he struggled around. And I think it's important to pause for a moment as we took yesterday off to recognize his work, to recognize the good work we have going around the country to try to address those inequities. Also, I note Happy New Year for our first board meeting of the new year. A couple things on updates from the closed session, and then I'm going to do a brief overview of a couple of contracting matters that were acted on at the last board meeting with regard to communications, the assisters program, and with regard to our qualified health plan and delivery system reform programs. First, just in terms of updates on the closed session, the closed session reviewed comments and details and did some final revisions to the CalHEARS IT solicitation. There's going to be a full presentation on that after my presentation, and that full solicitation is going to be released tomorrow on schedule. I'll note that the board also in closed session approved a delegation to the executive director, the finalization of that IT solicitation, and release in partnership with the Department of Healthcare Services and Mr. Mibb, because as I think everyone in this room knows, that solicitation is a joint solicitation of those three. So you'll hear more about that, but that finalization for the exchange was delegated to the executive director. The other action taken in closed session was to approve the executive director negotiating lease options for space. The exchange is growing. We're bringing on new staff, and part of that is staffing up is actually having a home. We have a couple temporary homes right now, and the board approved our entering into lease negotiations, and we have a number of spaces we're looking at in downtown Sacramento. With that, before moving to personnel matters, I want to give an update on some of the contracting processes that are underway, and I'm going to see if we can turn on our PowerPoint. This, I believe, is posted on the web, and for people on the phone, you should be able to, how do I go previous? Just say back. Okay, I'll say back. I'll say back again. There we go. Okay, thank you. what I want to do is at the last meeting we talked about two solicitations that the exchange issued in December. I wanted to give folks an update on those. Those are out in the market, but they're very important. And they're ones that we want and need engagement on a number of fronts on, so it's important that we frame that. Go to the next slide, please. These are all framed by something we talked about a few meetings ago, which is the way the exchange is going to seek to make policy, which is anchored in evidence. And so whether it's around a policy of the IT solicitation or essential benefits or the SHOP program, we will seek to start with laying out what our legal scope is, what both in federal law and state law we have to do, we can't do, what our parameters are. We're then going to collect the facts. What's happening in California, what's happening in other parts of the country, what can we learn from? We will actively, aggressively get stakeholders' comments and engage stakeholders as partners as we develop policies. Options will come to the board in a public way that will provide more opportunities for engagement. And in many cases, we will have final policies that will be built into the level two grant request, which will be prepared in about May to June of this year to go to the federal government. We are currently operating under resources provided under a level one grant that takes us through about August. The level two grant needs to basically fund the operation of the exchange all the way through 2014, the first full year of operations. So we will be taking a level two grant to the federal government in June. Go to the next slide, please. There are a number of issues that the exchange has before it. Again, I've reviewed these before, so I'm not going to talk in great detail, but issues regarding the IT system, stakeholder consultation, the SHOP program. What I'm going to talk about today is two of them. One is the issue about communication support, doing outreach, getting enrollment, and linked to that, the assisters program. And the second is our health plan management and delivery reform efforts. These are two areas that raise a lot of both operational issues, a lot of policy issues, and each of these are areas where we are going to be contracting with a vendor to help the exchange develop its operations and policies as we go forward. Next slide, please. So in the area of communication support and outreach and the assisters program, the board approved our issue and a solicitation, which was released in December. This is a joint solicitation. I really want to underscore that in the area of outreach and communications, we're going to be doing outreach to individuals throughout the state that may be eligible for Medi-Cal, that may be eligible for Healthy Families, that may be eligible for the exchange. Given that, this is a partnership between the exchange, the Department of Healthcare Services, and the Managed Risk Medical Insurance Board. Solicitation actually benefited from the dozens of meetings we held around the state, from the questions that we put out and got many answers to already about marketing, enrollment, strategies. And for those that have had an opportunity to look at the full solicitation, I think you'll see that in there, is that it benefited, again, from a huge amount of input we've already received. Next slide. These are also, for those that are really want the details, all of this, the full solicitation is available on the exchange's website. Just to highlight, there's three main elements that we're looking for in this solicitation. The first is developing a statewide marketing, outreach, and education strategy. And that strategy is one that's about reducing the number of uninsured, regardless of whether people get into Medi-Cal, Healthy Families, or the exchange. And it's going to be helping people get and retain coverage. So a core element is, again, the statewide marketing, outreach, and education strategy. The two other elements, though, that are part of this solicitation is to actually provide ongoing, right out of the gate, marketing communication support for the exchange and its programs. Is what's the right brand? What's the right name for the program? How do we message what we're doing? These are issues we want expert technical assistance around. And finally, to develop a plan for the implementation of an assisters program, of a program that will actually be the one-on-one, in-person help for people in deciding how they enroll, filling out forms, that whole range. And so this solicitation will have a vendor that will develop a plan. It'll have recommendations for options for how this plan will look, and that plan will be vetted, again, for stakeholder input as we develop it. Next slide, please. This was posted on December 27th. It is generally not our tradition to ruin everyone's holidays, though we seem to do it with some frequency. We sent it out to 12 vendors who have a lot of background expertise in the area of public relations, communications, outreach. Another dozen vendors have indicated interest. These proposals are going to be due the end of January, and we plan to start this initiative with this vendor in March. Next slide, please. The second solicitation that is out relates to health plan management and delivery system improvement. And the board approved the solicitation, and it's valued at $600,000. And the scope of work that we designed was framed with significant input from Department of Healthcare Services, Department of Managed Healthcare, and CalPERS. Now, go to the next slide, please. So what we're looking at here is under the Affordable Care Act, the exchange is called upon to develop standards for certifying and selecting qualified health plans. We're asking this vendor to help develop options and recommendations for the board to consider in what would those standards be, what would be the ongoing process for certifying, measuring the performance, quality monitoring, and compliance for qualified health plans, what would be the actual process for soliciting, engaging qualified health plans, and also to recommend potential strategies for using the exchange programs to improve the broader health delivery system in California. Next slide, please. With regard to delivery reform, we have not prejudged what that looks like. We've rather asked the vendors, and we'll be having a lot of discussions across California in this area, of what might standards be for qualified health plans and what activities they would engage in, what might the exchange do in aligning its activities with other purchasers, public and private sector, to align and promote quality improvement and payment policies. The thing that I would note, I'll go to the next slide, please, and then I'll come back to input. So we released this solicitation on the 22nd of December to about a dozen vendors. More have expressed interest. Again, proposals are going to be due January 30th, and this will also start on March 1st. Next slide. The communications and outreach solicitation benefited from our having dozens of meetings around the state and having developed, in consultation with our stakeholder advisory committees, about 50 questions that we're getting comments on. The health plan, delivery reform planning process don't have that benefit yet. The exchange, in the next weeks, will be developing a set of questions. We will get feedback from stakeholders on those questions. We'll be posting those, and we'll be holding another round of meetings around the state with stakeholders on, well, what do you think we should be looking at to provide input recommendations to the board with regard to qualified health plans, with regard to the roles that the exchange might play with delivery reform. The vendor will be provided with that input. The vendor will also develop its draft recommendations, which the exchange is going to share for public comment before the board considers final actions on each of these fronts. Last slide, please. This is a high-level timeline, and again, many of the things we do drive towards a near term. We have a June 2012 Level 2 grant that's due. But this is a reminder that it's not about a Level 2 grant. It's about having new plans, new products that are going to be available for millions of Californians effective sometime in fall of 2013 to be able to be offering coverage January 2014. So this lays out a timeline that we'll have a draft contractor report in April. We'll have a report on recommendations for certification standards delivery system in June. We'll have a draft solicitation document for plans in September. We will need to be releasing a health plan solicitation this fall of 2012, on or about October 2012, with plans responding by on or about January, for then the exchange selecting plans in early 2013, finalizing those plans, negotiations by April, such that in July we can have health plans with rates finalized. This is a very fast time frame. And it's the sort of time frame that, again, the exchange needs to be working on. It's one you're familiar with our work on the IT solicitation. We're all operating under a very fast time frame. These two solicitations are out right now. Again, we'll be reviewing bidders on this, but the products of them will always be coming through the board where it relates to policies. Recommendations will be made to the board and in a public process that will allow stakeholders to comment on drafts on what those recommendations are. The other thing that I'd that's it for the contracting update. The other updates that I'd note on personnel matters, we have, since our last board meeting, three new staff people, one of whom was specifically introduced at the last meeting, but I'll reintroduce him. We have, starting as of January, David Panish as Director of Government Relations. David, are you here? Please stand. Sharon Stevenson joining us as General Counsel, and Renee Cannon joining us as receptionist doing administrative work. Welcome, Renee. And again, we are growing our team. I would also note, though, that the work of recruiting goes on, and I want to appreciate a letter we received from a coalition of groups representing diverse populations in California, CPenn and others, noting their willingness and interest in working with us to do recruiting, to make sure our staff reflects the diversity of the state. We appreciate that. Posted on our website, and we've sent out electronically some of the 9 senior positions. This is something that's incredibly important that we do outreach for. We are looking at retaining a firm to do recruiting. We've specifically noted in that solicitation that the firms demonstrate their knowledge and expertise of assuring cultural, ethnic diversity in staff they recruit. It's a key part as we go forward. We look forward to your helping us with that recruiting. Finally, I will note that a couple other going forward notes. Last Friday, we noticed a new meeting of the exchange on January 26th. We will be having a meeting that is going to be on the topic of essential benefits. Friday before our last board meeting, the federal government issued a bulletin on a potential way the feds were considering addressing essential benefits, with comments requested by the end of the month. The exchange is working with our state partners to see if and how we can come up with common comments on those that bulletin. In doing that, it is our intent to, insofar as we have comments, develop a draft of those and share them before the 26th so stakeholders can look at those comments, comment in public at this forum to the full board. The board can look at that, consider that, before we would make comments to the federal government on those essential benefits bulletin. I would note that we are moving quickly. It is hard to get material out in advance as we would like. An example of that is what we're dealing with as a core topic today, the CalHEARS IT solicitation. We received, and you'll hear more about this in a moment, a really substantial, very rich set of comments. And people will have an opportunity to comment again at the 26th after they see the full final solicitation being released tomorrow. I would note that and I say in particular the board, they have raised to the board what are what might be considered fatal flaws, always has the opportunity to do addendums to the solicitation, to do updates to them, or if people have comments on issues, those are issues that might be addressed through clarifications that we can do with our vendors and otherwise. But we do take very seriously the need to provide public input opportunities, which means giving an opportunity for that to be meaningful, which is giving you as much foreshadowing and for information about what the information is. And it's one thing that we're certainly struggling with you, given the time frame we're working with. The last thing I would note is similarly that, and I believe it was SEIU that commented on the concern about our timing, there was some concern about our calendar for 2012 being scheduled at the same time as is Assembly Health Committee's. At the next board meeting, the board's going to look at the calendar for 2012 and consider adjusting the calendar. It is impossible to not conflict with something We always will be, not as a matter of intent, but there's a lot going on in the state, but we certainly want to be mindful of the folks that attend these meetings having other dueling competing demands on their time, and we'll be looking at that and getting back to folks on adjustments that we might be able to make to the board's schedule. With that, I'd see if there's public comments or questions.
Thank you, Peter. I wonder if the Assembly Health Committee might rather have a conflict between our meetings and theirs. Are there any questions or comments from the board about anything in the executive director's report? Are there public comments or questions?
Beth Capel on behalf of Health Access California, and is one of a number of lobbyists who live at the Assembly Health Committee on Tuesday afternoons in the legislative session. Very much appreciate the remarks of the executive director. With respect to the RFPs for the community outreach and enrollment and also the qualified health plans, we will be submitting comments in writing. They were, in our view, thoughtful documents, and we will be suggesting additions and some additional clarifications. We do think, particularly on the qualified health plan piece, in addition to delivery system reform, which we very much support, that assuring that we have good consumer protections, as we do in some parts of California law but not others, will be important. For example, with respect to network adequacy, that there are that there have been surveys for network adequacy of the relevant plan, of the plans that you're contracting with, that consumers cannot be balance billed for going out of network for emergency room care and the like. We will provide detailed comments on these, but we consider that additive to what you're already looking at. Similarly, with the marketing and outreach, we will have a number of comments to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth.
I mean, the one thing that I would note on that is that we will be, again, doing standard set of questions that will address issues such as network adequacy, et cetera, to get a range of stakeholders' comments on those sorts of issues, similar to what we did on the enrollment and outreach. And so those sorts of comments will be helpful for framing what we might say as standard questions we put out more broadly and post with a particular turnaround time.
Hello. Thank you.
Ellen Wu with CPenn. Happy New Year. I just wanted to thank your acknowledgement of our letter and the importance of diversity of staff and of vendors, and look forward to working with you. And also, we'll be commenting on the RFPs that are out. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good afternoon and Happy New Year's. My name is Monica Blanco Etheridge. I'm the new executive director for the Latino Coalition for Healthy California. And you clarified some of my concerns in your presentation, Mr. Lee, with regard to the hiring of individual contracts or contracting out with individuals who will be sensitive to the cultural linguistic competency issue. That's a concern for us as we represent the Latino voice for over 20 years here in California. In addition, I wanted to just make sure that I pointed out that the need to make sure that we include the private sector participation as a public-private partnership. The exchange needs to be to ensure that expertise from the private sector is sought and retained. We continue to wish to work with you and appreciate the invite that you have extended to us and other Latino organizations in encouraging us to help in circulating the recruitments for the positions that you release, and we hope that those positions will be hired with cultural linguistic competency for the population that we serve, which is the Latino population. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have one comment from the web and phone line. If you could open that, please.
Christy's line is open. Hello.
Yes, you're with us all here in Sacramento.
Thank you. My name is Christy Beauvert, and on behalf of the National Psoriasis Foundation and the psoriasis community in California, I thank you for the opportunity to provide public input on the health insurance exchange. Psoriasis is a chronic, painful, inflammatory disease and the most prevalent autoimmune disease in the United States. An estimated 7.5 million Americans are affected by psoriasis, and up to 30% may also have psoriatic arthritis, which is often disabling and causes progressive joint damage. There is also an increased risk for psoriasis patients developing other serious conditions such as heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. Many people living with psoriasis struggle to find a treatment that works for them. Psoriasis requires a treatment plan with a variety of options that accounts for individual needs. The health insurance exchange should provide an opportunity for patients with conditions such as psoriasis to find the right insurance plan that works for them. In order for the exchange to be successful, current restrictive policies need to end. These practices include step therapy, rigid pre-authorization and reauthorization policies, tiered cost sharing, and high out-of-pocket costs. For patients with psoriasis, these practices result in treatment delays, which can cause the disease to worsen. Unaffordable out-of-pocket costs for treatments often force patients out of compliance or out of therapy entirely. I often worry that changes in life, such as a new job, may require me to enroll in a new health plan. There should be easy-to-find information on how changing plans will affect current treatments. In addition, there should be protections for patients with chronic diseases like psoriasis who have to manage their diseases over a lifetime. Patients with chronic disease should not be required to reestablish the necessity for a treatment when switching health plans. Our goal in the psoriasis community is to work together with you to provide the information that you may need in order to develop a patient-centered health insurance exchange with a comprehensive benefits package. If you have any questions about these comments, please contact the National Psoriasis Foundation. Again, I thank you for your time and for this opportunity.
Thank you for your comments, and I would remind all our participants here and on the phone that we are trying to honor a two-minute limit to the comments that each of you makes, and you'll notice that Peter hasn't used his timer this time because I think we're all having respect for each other in our comments. So we didn't make that comment at the beginning of the public comment period, so I would just add that reminder now. There are no other comments on the phone line. Are there any other comments here? Thank you, Peter. The next item on the agenda is the presentation of the CalHERS draft solicitation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're going to have a presentation now on the solicitation that's going to be released tomorrow. I want to note that there's going to actually be a two-step release, and you'll hear more about this in the presentation, which is we'll be releasing the full solicitation tomorrow per schedule on the 16th, on the 18th. On the 26th, there's going to be a release two, which is going to be the draft contract and the financial terms and estimates of enrollment in the SHOP program. As you know and expect, we've been running quickly. It is a very good product, we believe, based on very good work, but we're making sure each product and the stage is well done. So there's going to be a two-stage release, again, the solicitation being released tomorrow, and on the 26th, the release of the contract terms, the financial elements, and the SHOP estimates. Before introducing our three speakers, I want to start by thanking our colleagues from Department of Healthcare Services, Managed Risk Medical Insurance Board, and the Office of Systems Integration. This has been very much a partnership, and it's one that the team of the exchange, its staff and consultants working with ClearBest have really done, I think, to use a term I've been teased about, a phenomenal job. And it is something that really has been a very strong piece of work that I think the state of California, again, with thanks to the advocacy community and many fronts that have made this a much better product, can feel very good about serving as a model for the nation about what any state should have as the IT expectations in terms of serving well to create a new culture of coverage and enabling that through an effective IT system. I'm happy to introduce Yolanda Richardson, Senior Consultant with the Exchange, Diane Kelser, the Acting Director of the CalHERS Project, and also Ken Jacobs from the UCLA-UC Berkeley team, which has been developing estimates in partnership with the Exchange to give a presentation on where we stand relative to the solicitation. Yolanda.
Thank you, Peter.
Today I'm going to give you a brief update on the CalHEARS solicitation, and I'll be covering several topics. We're very happy today to have with us Ken Jacobs with UC Berkeley, who will also be sharing some information around eligibility and enrollment estimates, and my colleague Diane Kelzer will be talking about the vendor input and the schedule and what's next. As Peter mentioned, this is just a reminder that the CalHEARS system project is a partnership that is jointly sponsored with our partners with the California Health Department of Healthcare Services, as well as the Exchange, the Managed Risk Medical Insurance Board, with the assistance of the Office of Systems Integration. It's important to note that the Exchange will serve as point of contact on the solicitation and manage the project. In September, we engaged our stakeholders on program design goals, what our focus would be for this particular project, and here's just a list to remind us of what we presented in October. No wrong door service system, making sure that we have a seamless and timely transition between health programs. We want to also make sure that we're minimizing the burden on establishing eligibility for our consumers. We want a system that enables real-time and accurate eligibility, and of course, helping consumers to make informed choices. And we hope that in the review of the solicitation, as Peter mentioned, that will be distributed tomorrow afternoon, that you will see that these program design goals have been taken into account. The scope of this solicitation is to acquire a contractor to design, develop, and deploy functionality to meet not only the requirements of the ACA relating to CalHEARS, but make sure that they can maintain and operate software and other functionality, and again, to keep in mind those program design goals that we just mentioned. At the last board meeting, we talked a little bit about the comments that we had received prior to the draft solicitation being released. We, at that time, opened up during the holidays a comment period, and we were very pleased to receive over 1,300 comments representing 36 organizations. The comments were various aspects of the solicitation, but they included, and we were very, we welcomed the compliments that we received, as well as we heard about corrections and clarifications that we needed to make and policy issues, and we look forward to those of you who took the time, and again, we're very grateful for you doing that. We look forward to you seeing that we've taken those comments and that input into account in the solicitation. We'd like to today just go over a few of those. Of course, we want to start off with the compliments. We'll also talk about a few of the clarification issues that you asked about, language, sister program functions, the list here. So let's get right into that. We, again, appreciate your expressions of support, and there were a wide range. We had the opportunity, we saw stakeholders on the street, and many of you expressed that you thought the solicitation was great work, and the short time frame that we had to put it together, and we appreciate that. We also heard from in the comments that the fact that we allowed to have an open comment period was very welcome, and it was certainly helpful for us. You see some of the other things, the inclusion of requirements for calculating assister fees. We had certain types of reporting requirements that people appreciated. And, of course, a lot of the consumer-friendly functionality that we included, we heard a lot about that. We did get some comments around clarification on the potential integration of health and non-health services programs, and we just wanted to reiterate what my colleague said last time, is that we have so many things that we want to focus on, but we want to make sure in January 2014 that the CalHEARS functionality will make sure that we have the ability to provide eligibility and enrollment services for the programs that you see listed here. We certainly have a future vision to accommodate the integration of other health programs, as well as making sure that CalHEARS can provide capacity to collect data and transmit that data to the appropriate county systems for non-health programs. That is our future vision. So we look forward to working with the vendors and hearing their approaches on that. We got a few comments around assuring language access, and we appreciate those of you who helped clarify the standard that we were using. We want to make sure we want to make sure that we just wanted to that you understand that we will be presenting the consumer web portal and the interactive voice response system in English and Spanish initially. Again, making sure that we're focusing on functionality that's important for us to have when we flip the switch. And we will have written communications, and that IVR system will be expanded based on those Medi-Cal threshold language methodology that you all reminded us of. Assister program functions. There were several pieces around this, but most importantly, to make sure that CalHEARS has functionality that allow consumers to identify who they've selected as an assister and make sure we can track that information, as well as tracking assister activities so that we can make sure that there is compliance with the requirements of this program. And so we appreciate that, and you'll see that in the section for vendor scope of work. Again, you know, this is all about providing and assuring a first-class user experience. As we mentioned last time, you'll see now we've put it throughout the solicitation in sections 1, 4, and 5. The requirement that vendors are going to illustrate how they're going to do this, how they will provide a first-class user experience for consumers, and we want them to include an analysis of the UX 2014 experience in their proposal. Privacy and security is certainly important. We got a particular suggestion on providing a timeout function so that those consumers who are actually enrolling in a public venue, that their information would be protected. You'll see that in the solicitation. Definitely identity management processes. You'll see that identified to make sure that we are dealing and working with the person as they say that they are. And, of course, we will continually add best practices to ensure that consumer privacy is addressed throughout the term of this project and going forward. You will see an absence of a lot of information around the in-person mail and phone services, and just to remind us all that the partnership has agreed to move forward in a different process, what we're calling our service center planning process, to make sure that all of the options are being considered that provide the best service and best value. That process, again, is going to start very soon with the development of an inventory report of all the services that are going to be required around these things. And then we look forward to working with stakeholders to get their input, and then finally finalizing an approach in April of this year. At this time, I will ask my colleague Diane Kelzer to talk about governance structure.
Thank you, Yolanda. So continuing on some of the comments that we heard, they wanted more clarification on the governance structure that we will be having throughout this process. And as Peter mentioned earlier, we are a partner with both DHCS and Mr. Mibb. So the three, Exchange, DHCS, and Mr. Mibb, are jointly responsible for the design and the governance of CalHEARS. The Exchange will hold the vendor contract and is responsible for ensuring that the development and the implementation of CalHEARS is successful. And DHCS, Mr. Mibb, and the Exchange are each responsible for providing oversight on the administration of their respective programs. Okay, this happened last time to me. Okay, in terms of vendor input, out of the 1,300 plus... Did I miss one? Oh, sorry. Oh, very important. We had a lot of information, a lot of comments on the MEDS functionality integration, and we've provided clarity that what we were looking for, that by December 31st of 2015, the CalHEARS will be modified to integrate the Medi-Cal eligibility data system, otherwise known as MEDS. The reason why we're looking at this is these functions, this effort will allow CalHEARS to advance the goal of providing a seamless consumer experience across various programs. It will contribute to the building of a more integrated enterprise architecture and meet federal requirements for the reuse strategies for technology projects. And that's described in Section 1. In terms of vendor input, we had about 430 vendor responses, and we were very, very pleased with their recommendation and questions that they had, recommendations to improve some of the overall solicitation and questions about processes. For example, they talked about bundling optional services for pricing. We've addressed this in the cost schedule, and you'll see that in attachment 8. Questions regarding processes, identifying number of users. Again, those metrics will be provided in the solicitation in section 1 and section 4. Also, roles and responsibilities of the counties, Mr. Mebb and DHCS. And as Yolanda noted and talked to, we're looking at that through the service center planning process. We also had questions about how data will be transferred between the CalHEAR system, SAWS, and potentially the MAXI2 system. We met with the counties. We got better clarification, and you'll see better requirements regarding the system capabilities. And again, this was with the assistance of the county consortia, Mr. Mebbs, and DHCS. And at this point, I'm going to turn this over to Ken Jacobs.
Good afternoon. First, I want to thank Peter and the Exchange Board for inviting me here today and for selecting our team at UCLA and UC Berkeley to do modeling work for the Exchange. And I want to thank the California Endowment for their support for the development of the CalSim microsimulation model. We understand the importance of this research and planning for the rollout of the Exchange and Medi-Cal expansion and for the real success of the healthcare reform in the state. So we had planned originally today to come in and present some of the enrollment and eligibility estimates. Last week, the Exchange staff pulled together a very productive meeting with some of the top healthcare simulation experts in the country who've done healthcare simulation and microsimulation models, including John Gruber, people from RAND, and from the Urban Institute. And they were very gracious with their time and had very good feedback on the model, which we are now working to incorporate. And so we will have revised estimates that we will release shortly in the coming weeks. But I did want to take the time to talk a little bit about what we have in the model, what it does, and then what some of the issues were that came up, some of which depend on yourselves. So I know Jerry Kaminsky presented an overview of the model in May. To review, the model predicts firm behavior and insurance offerings and individual behavior and coverage selection in response to changes in policy. And it's based on the best available evidence from the literature on firm and individual behavior. In terms of firms, the basic assumption is that firms act rationally and they're acting as essentially purchasing agents of the workers. And so the question is, for the employees in a firm, are they better off having coverage through the firm or receiving higher salaries and getting higher pay and getting coverage through the Exchange while the employer also pays the penalty. As with other modelers, we find a very small overall impact of the policy on employer offers. Some drop, some take up. It's not a significant change. Main factors that affect individual behavior include current insurance status, where are people starting from, insurance options available to the person, their household income, the change in insurance costs under the new policy, and health status. We've made a number of important changes to the model since the May presentation, and incorporated new policy elements based on the draft regulations. A major one was the more stringent definition of eligibility for coverage in the Exchange in the case of an offer of job-based coverage to an individual or a family member, which had the effect of reducing eligibility for subsidies. So based on the feedback, the two main places that we plan to do some immediate change in the model are, one has to do with, we believed in looking at other sources, we recognized that we had fewer families overall who were in the Exchange eligible between 133 and 400% federal poverty level than some other data sets. And the consensus of the experts was that we should reweight to some of the BLS data sets that are designed for looking at household income, which we will be doing. The second area that they raised, and this turns out to have an important impact on the results, was what we project forward as the rate of premium increases. We've been using 7.5% a year based on what's been happening currently. advice we have received both in Washington and from the group of experts was that that's probably about a percent point too high. And that does affect exchange subsidy eligibility, so we will test and look at the differences by changing those assumptions. There's some other aspects that are really important that depend on what you do, in effect. We are, at this point, looking at a high and low Medicaid take-up scenarios. Our low is based on the CBO's estimate of 57% of the newly eligible and 10% of the previously eligible take-up. On the high end, we've been using 70 and 40, respectively. Urban Institute puts the high at 75. If you look at where people are right now, estimates of current take-up in Medicaid range from about half to 61%, and states' estimates go up as high as 80% in Massachusetts. So this really is a question, you know, back to you in terms of, do you want us to look at some other set of parameters? Similarly, understand for the IT at enrollment planning, it's important to have an analysis of what's the phase-in period, or the crank-up period is as people actually enroll. We've started from assuming 50% of those who will enroll will do so in the first year, and the others will phase in over 5 years. But depending on what you what is planned to do in terms of the turnkey of getting people in at the very beginning, people who are already in LIP or otherwise connected to the system, could affect that. And so we can assess some other policy parameters as well and look at do we expect a larger group to come in up front. Next, the microsimulation model as constructed provides estimates from the evidence of take-up in the exchange based on what we know of individual behavior, and that's individual behavior in the current world. Just as with Medicaid, there are things that you can do that will increase people's coverage in the exchange, which would change those results. We know that there's significant churning among the uninsured in any given year. The people who are uninsured, a half to two-thirds, either come in or leave uninsurance within that year. The biggest movement is between people. We know uninsurance is associated with job loss, leaving a job, moving. And so to the degree that we design mechanisms, or you design mechanisms, that capture people in those circumstances and provide a way for them to seamlessly be covered and to go into the exchange, the percentage of the uninsured who are covered can rise. And we'll be trying to think about what do we think those parameters are as well. Finally, I think it's important to note that our simulation model is a point-in-time estimate, but the individual market is largely a transitional market. It's one in which people come in after losing job-based coverage, stay for a period of time, and then go out. About 60% of the transfers are between job-based coverage. About 20% of the transfers are between the individual market and public programs. And to give a sense, Elise Gould, using the Survey of Income and Program Participation, found that in a two-year period beginning in 2008, only 12% of the people were in the individual market for the entire 2 years. So 71% were in for less than a year, and 17% between 1 and 2 years. That includes the margins on both sides, but that gives you some sense that this is a transitional market. And so when we're thinking about things like IT and what you need to have for personnel, it's not just that you're enrolling the people who might be eligible at a given time, but that's going to continue to move over the period. So again, I want to express my appreciation to the staff and the board, and we look forward to continuing to work with you on this.
Thank you. Okay, so let's talk about next steps. As Peter mentioned, we've talked several times that the solicitation will be released tomorrow, January 18th. And you also heard that we will be submitting an update on the 26th, which will include the contract model with the service level agreements and the terms and conditions, and the SHOP enrollment estimates. So just to kind of go over the timeline, again, releasing the solicitation tomorrow on the 18th. An update will be released on the 26th. We are still, this actually has changed from last time. We have moved the bidders conference to January 27th. with the bid still being due on February 24th, contract awards still online for April 17th. We're still looking forward to the pre-enrollment implementation of July 1st, 2013, and the first day of the exchange and expanded Medi-Cal coverage, January 1st, 2014. Thank you.
We have new microphones now, so I've turned on and off. Thank you very much. Are there questions or comments from members of the board? Bob? You have to turn it on at the base here. There's a switch. There you go. Got it. There you go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to, a couple of attaboys and attagirls, I think, are in order, knowing that we still have a lot more work to do. But number one, kudos to you and the staff, Peter, for taking a pretty complicated and hairy solicitation and trying to make the best of it with all of the comments. 1,343 comments, and I'm sure all but one of them compliments, right, Yolanda? So thank you to staff. Number two, once again, I'm just marveling, Madam Chair, at the ability of the advocates and the advocacy organizations to quickly turn around constructive comments back to us. Particularly, I find helpful and useful, I think we do all, when the advocacy organizations get together and try and organize their concerns and comments under a single banner with as many as 8, 10, 12 different organizations signing on. And thank you, Elizabeth Landsberg, for Weston Center and that group that included a bunch of folks getting together to put together comments in that on that matrix, which was, I think, probably Christmas Eve or something, some amazing time frame. So I just want to, it really gives us a sense of, gives me a sense of comfort that folks who are in the boat really want to make this work and getting their comments in. Lastly, and I'll save any other comments for after hearing from the speakers, but thank you for in advance for bearing with us with this time frame. It is really an oppressive time frame, but I think that folks do understand, and I'll make the implicit explicit. Every couple of weeks we save on this end in terms of process is another couple of weeks we buy ourselves on the implementation readiness side as we get closer and closer to January 2014. So we know that there are a lot of calls for more time and slow down and more stakeholder input and all those kinds of things. We're doing the best we can, but I really do believe that we have to balance this notion of speed and inclusion in terms of the comments. And I want to say to you, Peter, I think you folks are doing a damn good job of trying to balance both. So, thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Any other board comments? Kim?
Thank you. I had a couple questions for Ken. And really appreciate the update since the presentation that Jerry did last May. A couple points and help us better understand how you and the super, as I call them, smarty pants, who have been convened to help noodle through these different micro-simulation models and underlying assumptions and estimates and so forth. How does the model account for the fact that the world envisioned by the ACA, indeed the world required of the ACA, is a very different world than one which we've all experienced? So whether it be, and I'm thinking principally in the context here of, you know, single streamline application, automated verification, real-time eligibility enrollment, I mean, some of the new rules and requirements create a very different context above and beyond the ones you've spoken to in terms of the individual mandate, et cetera. So how does your modeling and your thinking account for the different contexts in a 2014 environment?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. That's part of why when we looked at take-up, looking at different parameters, because the 57% is sort of the where we are in today's world in terms of Medicaid. The in a new world, what does that go up to? We can look at the literature on the various, how there's a lot of good literature on how various kind of outreach changes enrollment. We can look at different states as well and say, okay, there's state variation, but some of this is unknown. And when we get to the exchange enrollment, especially, you know, of the uninsured, what share go into the subsidized exchange, and we're using elasticities derived from the literature on change in price and taking into account the individual mandate. But all of these other elements will matter as well in terms of how easy it is, how much we have the mechanisms in place to capture people. And so in the end, that part of the modeling is an art, not a science, that there is this point where we have to make, based on the on what we know about the world, we have to assume, okay, we're in another world. How much, you know, what how much in terms of the parameters do we want to test and say, if we do this right, can we boost that by 10%, by 20%?
So I think that's such an important takeaway for all of us, which is we have an opportunity to have a significant bearing or a significant influence on what those numbers and ranges may be. So for example, you called out one example of decisions, and you cited it as an exchange decision. It's exchange and
right.
Department of Healthcare Services in terms of churning and continuity of coverage. Are there other policy decisions to be made that you would call out as having particular bearing on enrollment that you would encourage us to be paying attention to?
Again, I'd say there's a whole series around this issue of seamless coverage. When someone goes in and applies for unemployment insurance, as they do that online, are they asked the question, and as a forced question, you could do it as a forced question, do you have health insurance? Do you want to sign up for coverage now? We, you know, when someone goes to the DMV or online at the DMV and registers that they're moving, we know that's another place where that you have moving is a strong sign of loss of insurance or a sign of loss of insurance. Do you have health insurance? If we track those various things out, there's a whole series of places where at a very low cost we could capture people and move them in. The other elements, I think, are the ones you mentioned, all the no wrong door, all the things that make it as easy as possible for people once they've applied to stay in coverage. That is a new world, and that should change enrollment significantly. And then finally, the outreach efforts, the evidence from the literature on where you see the biggest increases in when there's outreach is in people who are not native English speakers. And so all the work that is done and that will be or can be done on reaching people in their own language, having people who are culturally competent to get to folks in the places that they are, all of that's going to have a big impact on enrollment.
Well, thank you. I think it's just we recognize that there's some aspects of the federal law itself that really determine who's in and out, and some of that is evolving, and you mentioned some of the policy guidance around what we shorthand characterize as the firewall population, which we'll see whether or not that evolves further. But then all these issues around outreach, education, ease of enrollment are going to be critical. Those are decisions we have the ability, the opportunity to influence, and that in turn is going to influence how many people actually get involved.
So, absolutely.
Thank you, Kim. Are there any other questions from members of the board? Questions or comments? We have none at this time from the line, so we will go here in the auditorium. Hi, Betsy.
Hello, Secretary Dooley. I wanted to add to the compliments very quickly to say that Consumers Union very much appreciates both the solid product of the CalHEARS solicitation and the process that was used to allow the public to comment on a draft. I think is highly unusual. We heard both from our national colleagues and colleagues in other states that it really makes the California Exchange stand out in terms of the process in a good way. I like a lot of what we've heard today, sound very responsive to some of the suggestions that we've made. Two I just want to call out are on language access. The recognition of the Medi-Cal threshold language is very important. And the other one is about privacy and security. We know that privacy and security will be really critical issues to the long-term success and the trust in the exchange. And yet it's an evolving area. an area where the law perhaps has not really caught up with the new structures that have been created under healthcare reform, including exchanges. So we appreciate the recognition Yolanda spoke about and the need for keeping up with finding out what the best practices are, and we look forward to Consumers Union to working with you all, providing whatever help we can in developing those best practices and places where there may need to be actually changes in law to address the privacy and security that's just so important. Thank you.
Thanks, Betsy.
Beth Capel on behalf of Health Access California. A few points on the CalHEARS solicitation and then also on the microsimulation model that you've heard a little bit about today. On the CalHEARS model, the CalHEARS solicitation, we appreciate the clarity on governance. That was one of the things that was troubling to us. We also appreciate the greater clarity on DHCS as the sole state agency for Medicaid and the role of meds. We would very much like to see the med system updated, but didn't think this was the appropriate vehicle for accomplishing that as dearly as we'd like to see it happen. With respect to the microsimulation model, which you've heard some discussion today, in addition to the point that Ms. Belcher makes about the opportunity for the exchange to really make a difference, in effect, we have a natural experiment here. And you can, something that is rare, we can actually make predictions and see whether they come true or not. In essence, the numbers you are getting are predictions about what the impact of the experiment is that we're all about to embark in 2014 is. And so one of the areas we've done a lot of work on is what's going to be the response of employers to the new world. And so there are widely varying opinions about what's going to happen and what the impact on the exchange will be. If many employers cease offering coverage, it's a very different world than what the Congressional Budget Office anticipated, for example. So those, we encourage, you know, we will work with the UC team as well, but encourage the Exchange Board and the other state agencies to also ask these questions about what the world could look like and what it should look like. Thank you.
Thanks, Beth.
Madam Chair and members, Elizabeth Landsberg with the Western Center on Law and Poverty, and we do sincerely appreciate the opportunity to comment on the RFP, which was an unusual process that we took very seriously, and we think it was an excellent product that was put out, and it sounds like there is strengthening in a number of areas, but we were really looking forward to continuing to see the development of it. A couple of issues on the governance, I guess for me, not a lot was clarified today. We understand that the RFP is being issued jointly by the triumvirate, as Peter has referred to the three agencies, and appreciate the clarification that each program will continue to have oversight over, each agency will continue to have oversight over its own program. To the extent, for example, that an upgrade of meds is included, and I'm not sure, I understood that there would be an extension of the integration of meds, but I'm not sure whether that will be part of this CalHEARS solicitation. We do think it would be helpful, however, to have some clarification about roles. If there's a disagreement, for example, about the way the contractor is programmed in MAGI, that is something that will affect the eligibility of 8 or 9 million Californians on Medi-Cal, and so we're wondering what the formal process would be if DHCS and the exchange, for example, had a disagreement. This is not a theoretical problem. There have been issues with the joint children's application not properly screening folks for Medi-Cal. So we would encourage that there be some greater clarification about DHCS's role as the single state Medicaid agency to administer the Medi-Cal program. We share the desire to modernize meds and understand that that may be a longer process. Hope that there will be either more specification in this RFP or perhaps it will be a separate process. It's also helpful to hear the clarification that the mail, phone, and in-person applications will be done by the service center since that wasn't in this RFP, and also look forward to seeing the additional detail about integration with SAWS systems so that we can truly have the no-wrong door vision moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Hi, and Happy New Year, Board. Kathy Sunderling with the County Welfare Directors Association. We certainly look forward to seeing the final RFP, and clearly from what you've seen today, a lot of thoughtful changes were made, I think, to the draft RFP that we saw and commented on. We didn't see it expressly mentioned in the PowerPoint today, but did want to just repeat something that we've said, I think, a couple times, but bears repeating. We're assuming that the focus of the RFP is to ask bidders to bid on a central rules engine and not to receive bids on a distributed model, i.e. using the SAW systems. We do think and urge again that you consider explicitly asking for that option, that distributed option, to be bid, again, assuming that's not in the final RFP, both the distributed and the central rules engine. We've given you a lot of information on why we think that that's advisable. Just 2 points from today's conversation, and one that was spurred by Ken Jacobs' comments. Considering all of those transitions and the movement in and out and across programs that he's finding, from a customer service aspect, it seems that leveraging what we've already got and making sure that it's a very integrated, or integrating and building on what you've already got, is going to be the best. And just to say, you should look at all these options. We just think explicitly you should ask for all of those options to be bid on, so you give yourself the best information to make the best decisions that you can. And clearly, we're moving now from the IT more to the operations, and we'll look forward to participating in that service center planning process. Appreciate the mention of that, so we can move toward that culture of coverage and make sure that the outreach and the operations are where we want them to be. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy.
I'm Kim McCoy-Wade with the Alliance to Transform CalFresh, and was one of the groups who coordinated a sign-on letter of 16 groups on the question of human services integration. So we are very happy to see that in there, and thank you for your acknowledgement of that. I will say, though, that we are quite concerned that the language in there is that CalHERS will transmit data. We actually think that's a step backwards for the integration we currently have in the state, where people who currently apply for health care, Medi-Cal or Healthy Families, are connected to nutrition automatically at the counties with the SAW system. If you're building this world-class consumer experience for healthcare, that's wonderful, but you're actually creating a separation with the health and cash that families need to truly be healthy. So I ask you to look at three other things. Make sure it's starting the application, not just transmitting a data dump, but actually starting the application process and everything that means formally. Two, why not complete the application? Most states have an online application for CalFresh. Most counties have an online application for CalFresh. It's not that hard to put that as part of CalHERS. And three, similarly, CalHERS could deliver that information back to folks. Hey, you're eligible, you're not eligible. Seems like you're eligible, even if that's happening in another rules engine. All of that needs to be building on the county integration of these supports for families, not separating out. So I urge you, transmit's a great start, but actually the way transmit in and of itself is a step backwards. We need to make sure we're stepping forwards. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Ellen Wu with the California Pan-Ethnic Health Network. I just want to reiterate thank you for considering our comments and reiterate some of them. Really great to hear the clarification about using the Medi-Cal managed care threshold languages, and that the website will be translated into Spanish. We really encourage you to consider translating it also into the Chinese. And also the idea that the whole thing doesn't have to be translated, but there could be portions translated into other languages until such a time that there is a higher need or resources available to do that. And certainly the idea that the no wrong door approach, that if someone speaks a language other than English and not Spanish and goes up on the website, that they somehow have a place to go to at least know that they can get help. So with that in mind, that we really encourage a notice that's very prominent in at least 15 different languages on all the pages that that will direct someone to either oral help or translate a document to a list of assisters or something that they can go to. Again, we're trying to decrease the difference between who's eligible and who actually then becomes enrolled, and really reaching out to communities of color who are most impacted by this. And also that the language on the website should be very accessible and friendly, and use plain language to consider health literacy issues. And with regards to the marketing RFP, we understand that there will be focus groups conducted in English and Spanish, and that you guys are running on a really fast timeline, but hope you will also consider focus groups in other languages. We are working on a project with the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research, funded by the California Program on Access to Care, that is doing a few group interviews that we'll share that information with you, but more information is always better. And that with the marketing RFP, the clarification that the Medi-Cal managed care threshold languages should be used with marketing and outreach materials as well. And the importance of contracting with vendors who are really familiar with communities of color needs. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen.
Good afternoon. My name is Lucy Quaccinella. I'm here today on behalf of Maternal and Child Health Access. We also very much appreciated the opportunity to comment, even over the holidays. I'd like to just focus on a few items that I don't believe any of the other commenters really did hone in on and did not have an opportunity to mention this afternoon. One of them is that we think this CalHERS system is an excellent opportunity to have a way to track and monitor aggregate cost sharing for consumers. This is a functionality that exists, for example, in the Medicare Part D copayment tracking. To make a long story short, you know, government pays subsidies, the consumer is responsible for a certain amount of cost sharing, but for low-income people, there's an aggregate there. And right now, we basically have to tell clients to keep a shoebox with receipts, and if you think you've hit your cap, come see us and we'll try and get that sorted out. In Medicare Part D, in contrast, they've automated that system. So this would be an excellent opportunity to build that kind of functionality from the get-go. Along those lines, there's another functionality that we think could be a major improvement to our current Medi-Cal system. As I'm sure the board knows, Medi-Cal is payer of last resort. So when people have other health coverage, they have to go to that other health coverage first. The system, however, in California today for informing consumers as well as providers about whether they have other health coverage, and typically, not always, but often, this will be a single mom with kids in some kind of child support medical enforcement system, and a court may be involved with ordering that medical support be there for the children. When that happens, how is the family informed, and what is the scope of that coverage? What is the cost sharing of that coverage? These can be major barriers to access. Again, in terms of functionality for CalHERS, there are databases that we can be accessing so that as part of the meds integration and other functionality in CalHERS, we have that improvement. Others have addressed the question of transparency and accountability. We think that's also very important. To us, it's clear that the individual departments will remain responsible for their programs unless there's some sort of change in law. But what we're still not seeing, even with today's clarification, is what, for example, the role of the executive committee will be in terms of where consumers and others can go to report problems with the CalHERS system. So if it's something we notice, for example, that's a glitch or not working properly in terms of screening for Medi-Cal, of course we take that to the department. But if the executive committee and the exchange board are involved with the overall oversight and monitoring of CalHERS, what is that interface going to be? The real issue here for us is how do you get problems fixed quickly? And maybe more importantly, where's prevention? So it's a type of functionality, I would argue, because if I were a vendor, I would want to know where those chains of commands are and know that the public is going to be on the lookout for problems, and the public is going to want quick, time-sensitive changes in the system. So functionality.
Excuse
there.
Me, if these comments aren't in the comments that you've already submitted, could you provide them in writing? I'm really trying to be respectful of the executive director's 2-minute time limit, and we're a couple minutes over the 2 minutes already.
They are, and I'll end there. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Good afternoon. Leticia Alejandres, California Family Resource Association. We represent over 200 family resource centers in all 58 counties. And our comments are really around the service center planning partners as well as the assisters. And we want to remind you to really expand your thinking here and to really integrate and to include family resource centers. These are community-based family resource centers that are in low-income communities quite often, and they work very closely with families. And they're very well aware of the pulse of the community and working in communities of color. So we encourage you to do that. We also want to join some of my colleagues here who mentioned about vendors who are familiar with working with communities of color and the needs of communities of color. So we just want to echo that. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We have no callers waiting in the queue on the phone, and there it looks like we have taken all the comments that are here in the auditorium. Are there any other comments or reflections from members of the board? Bob.
Yeah, just to the a couple of commenters, Madam Chair, not yet fully satisfied with the governance clarification issue, and I'm not sure I 100% understand. For in the example that was brought up, might have been Lucy Quasinella's comment about if there's a dispute, where does that get settled? How do you suggest, Madam Chair, that we just take in and just try to clarify that going forward? Is there a need to? For you or Peter to nail down that with greater clarity today, some response to those concerns.
The roles and responsibilities under the new law are places that are unclear, and I think the commitment that we've made in this administration to work cooperatively with the objectives of the ACA. And the structure of this exchange process has been to work toward collaboration and consensus decision making. There are clear places in the law where the Medi-Cal program, the Healthy Families program, the insurance regulators at DMHC and CDI have clear authority. Those areas of authority we may find areas that bump up against the objectives of the ACA. I am very committed to resolving those in as cooperative a way as possible. But at the end of the day, the areas of Medi-Cal administration will be managed by the Medi-Cal department. And I wanted to add my personal appreciation to Toby Douglas and Jeanette Casillas and Brent Barnhart and the representatives of the insurance commissioner who have worked with Peter. And I'm very impressed with the way everyone has come together to get to the right answer. But there isn't a clear authority over some of these areas. Many of the areas that I believe are within the jurisdiction of the Medi-Cal program will be advantaged by the funding that is available through the exchange program. And so I think there are some mutual incentives to maintaining this spirit of collaboration. And when and if we reach those moments when there are disagreements, we will find a way to cross those bridges. But I don't think we have yet found an impediment, and I am certainly committed to trying to avoid them. And so I don't want to try to solve a problem that hasn't yet existed.
And when in doubt, the tiebreaker is the law.
Yes.
Whatever the statutory authority lies, that's where it lies.
Yes. Yes, Peter.
In the discussions we've had with DHCS and with Mr. Mibb, and we are looking, and this is why getting the comments in writing that we received around governance issues, to what extent do we have MOUs, a charter, et cetera, we have, and lay these out. We'll be doing that in the weeks and months to come, and so your comments are actually all very helpful on this, is that so we can be clearly communicating where there's things that are in that gray overlap. How do we plan on dealing with them, recognizing there are some pieces there? And so I think that it's absolutely, we are working in not just the spirit of collaboration, but in truly effective collaboration. But the more we can be clear with each other and with the public where those lines appear and how we plan on deal with them. It's going to help us so we sort of chart out those, some of them ahead of time, but it won't be between now and the next meeting, but we'll be working these out and sharing those publicly.
I'm going to interrupt as we have. We haven't totally worked this out with the telephone, and we had sort of closed the public comment, but we now have a caller, and I want to show respect for that and open the line for the person that is on the phone. So, operator, if you would let the caller know that the line is open.
Hello?
Hello. Do we have a caller on the line?
My name is Sylvia Yee, but I'm not hearing an operator.
That's okay. You're hearing us.
Okay, great. I'm not sure. So, reacting so slowly, I pressed some inadequate buttons before.
Excuse me. Would you please identify yourself?
Yes. Thank you. My name is Sylvia Yee. I'm with Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund. And I just wanted to echo that that for those who are capable and wanting to use CalHEARS independently, the true accessibility and simplified language will help immensely with that. We really appreciate the opportunity to comment on that and support that. I also wanted to just draw attention to what might be a very specific and rather narrow problem, but for those who do have either health-related guardians or individuals who help them either consistently or occasionally with application processes, that there be a way for those individuals to also use the online. They may not be the individual pressing the button, but they will be beside an assistant who is helping them, and to not run into problems where they'll be asked questions that are very difficult to answer, and I'll try to be very specific about this, where you'll be asked on the application art that you are submitting these, that you're not pressing the buttons, that you are submitting the questions, and they are your answers, but they're done with the assistance of another person. It's a kind of complex situation, but it just to recognize that those situations exist, and they will be using IT as much as possible. And then also to echo that appreciation for the upcoming stakeholder process for another solicitation, to request greater notice about the solicitation process so that people with disabilities can provide critical input on issues such as quality measures for the health plan.
Thank you for your comments, and the comment about assisters is included in the solicitation, that the assistance of people for those who need it will be provided in the system that is developed. And with regard to the timing, as we have said before, we have a very ambitious agenda to be ready to go in January of 2014. We're providing as much input and notice as we can. I think it is still going to be very hard for us to be ready to go, but we are committed to trying to do that, but it is going to be at the expense of as much time as everyone would like to have. So I appreciate your comments, and I appreciate the effort that everyone is making, including those of you that are responding on these very short turnarounds. Are there other comments from the board?
Excuse me, not a comment, but I was wondering if Peter could just go over once again what the remaining schedule is in terms of the process for this RFP.
Yeah, the timeline for this solicitation is tomorrow. We'll be releasing the solicitation. On January 26th, we'll be having what we call sort of addendum one, though it's not an addendum because it's a notice now, which is the actual contract language and the shop enrollment estimates. On January 27th, there will be a bidders conference. And I do want to note that we got, again, as you heard from Diane, not only really good comments from
stakeholders, range of advocates, but also good comments from vendors. And I think they bode well for this solicitation being one that has partners that think, yes, this is a tough timeline, but it's doable. And so there's folks that are ready to partner to get this done. Solicitation then has responses due. Remind me of the date.
February
24th. That's a tight time frame, but again, we've structured the solicitation saying you don't have to respond to every single nth degree, respond to these major components, et cetera. And it's structured to be able to be responsive and responded to in that time frame. The goal is to award the contract April 17th. And this is all with what the solicitation notes, with starting pre-enrollment implementation as soon as July of 2013. That, we'll note, is an aggressive unto itself. It's not waiting till fall, and it's one of the things we'll be talking with vendors as they apply, but this is in the spirit of trying to do as much pre-enrollment work as we can. So that's the basic timeline. Okay. The other thing, I wanted to note, again, written comments are great, and so are verbal, and we like both. I do want to remind folks that given our next meeting is on this question of the bulletin on essential benefits, we are committed to providing a draft of comments we may make in concert with our state partners prior to that meeting. We also welcome comments that you may have prior to that. It wouldn't hurt. And so, again, if you have, if different folks out there have strong opinions to say, boy, if you're thinking about making comments, think about this, that is helpful. And we've certainly seen in the solicitation area, the more you can sort of give us thoughts ahead of time, it gives the staff, the board, the other state partners the ability to consider issues they may not have thought about ahead of time and not just do it with a two-day turnaround, but with more turnaround. So, and again, I'm not issuing a solicitation timeline for you, but I'm going to sort of the reality that we have to working with the state partners as we're doing now to come up with a draft that you have a few days on. It really is the sooner the better in hearing from you on this issue or others.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Thank you all. We will see you next Thursday. The meeting is adjourned.